Hello, Temi Tokpe. Thank you for jumping on Backend by Gerald Black. It's a pleasure to have you here today on this episode. Like I like to start all my other podcasts, can you please tell us everything that there is to know about Temi Tokpe, right?
All right. Thank you so much, Gerald. Great to be here. Interesting thing I should talk about myself. I rarely have the opportunity to do that but I'll just say basically I'm a builder. I like building different things. Since I was small, I've just had that natural curiosity to always try to tinker around with things. So while I was growing up, my dad, of course, used to be in oil and gas, and I was always going to take his books. I had no understanding of what they meant, but I was just that curious person, always checking, tweaking things, playing, dismantling toys, reassembling them. So along the line, those soft skills kind of just stuck. I was still gathering as much knowledge I could, and across board. I never chased entrepreneurship. I know some people have those growing up stories saying, oh, yeah, I used to sell and buy. No, I never chased those kind of things. Yeah. It kind of just landed on my lap. And it was just in uni. I had pretty much had free time because of the way my lectures were going. So along the line, I just kind of found the time, and also joined like a student organization called ISEC. It was a youth leadership organization. So we were doing projects ranging from HIV/AIDS down to cancer project, down to environment, IT skills. So it was even around the IT skills and teaching students that just actually got me interested in about the whole thing of technology. And from there, I basically started helping my friends who were now going into tech, right, at that earliest time, consult. And just by my nature of reading and also speaking to quite a lot of friends I knew, kind of started helping quite a lot of people. And that's how my journey actually began. So in the nature of just me, a builder, I love to do many things, think out many things, and just explore what the opportunities are. Yeah.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So I know later on in your career, you went on to build Printivo with a couple of other co-founders, and now you're at Get Equity, right? But before we get into that, can you just provide some background, you know, into what you were up to prior to Printivo, prior to Get Equity? What were all the things you were doing? And, you know, how did you eventually get into these endeavors?
All right, thank you. Like I said, it was consultancy that I began with. I was helping quite a lot of friends do this. And along the line, I went to do a short master's in Brighton, University of Sussex. We had a class. Interestingly, with my fellow mate right now also went to start up his own company. So we were two of us representing ISEC, if you will, and we studied. Along that line, we also were supposed to do a go-to-market strategy. This was the first time of what you call a go-to-market strategy for the school to come into Nigeria, right? And we were able to pull that off. And from then on, of course, learning, I was young, had good some money in my account, and I was a bit confident to take on the world. And yes, I joined. I landed in Nigeria. I wanted to continue my consultancy. By then, I had a couple of very, very senior, senior projects I've executed. And so at a young age, when you've done quite some things that you feel you're very accomplished, even in the consulting space, you kind of say, okay, let me start on my own. I don't really need to work for anyone. And I always tell people I've never worked for people. I've always just started things for a very long time. So along that same line, I was also helping a friend record music. We're in the studio, and he was recording music. And I wanted to just continue my consultancy, and I was looking for where to print a business card, mind you, and that wasn't there. And as I was checking online, browsing through, I found this company called Printivo, and I liked the whole flow, what it was promising. So I quickly hit up. I asked people who knows anyone, and then they pointed me to Oluyomi. And I sent him a DM asking him, oh, I'd love to be part of this. I mean, I realized that also his great mannerisms and character, because imagine if you get a DM, someone says, I love your business and I want to be a part of it. You might tell him to just leave your DMs. Like, are you okay or something? Like, that was literally the first thing I went with. But I was very adamant that I wanted to be part of this. And so we met for the first time. We started chatting, but then we met for the first time and it kind of just clicked. We basically from there started figuring out quite everything that you see today. But for me also, I continued the line. My consultancy might never switched off. I still run my consultancy and I've been running that for years. I've done quite a lot in the ecosystem, helping people, provide guidance, strategize, do work, execute on some interesting projects. And I'm bringing all those 40 right back because I'm relaunching that agency very soon. So all this over the years is going to be, oh, what have I done? And then people are going to see and like, oh, you're the one that did that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. But along the line still, Get Equity still came out from my passion in helping businesses and entrepreneurs, because I found out, look, it is brutal running a company in Nigeria. It's not for the faint-hearted. I always tell people, while you see a lot of founders smile, there's quite a lot of tears, quite a lot. And many people might be, but I think entrepreneurship, as it is one of the very few places where there is no exact playbook, right? And you make your own playbooks with your own hands that might be good or bad. And secondly, the fact whereby it is quite difficult to talk about what you're going through because people cannot connect with what you're going through, right? If you're not talking to a fellow CEO who can maybe empathize with you because they are passing either similar things or have faced it, it's very difficult to call up someone or your dad and say, oh, dad, I'm going through, oh, I can't pay salaries or, oh, this one. And your dad's like, oh, sorry, but they literally did not connect with you. And you're just having someone as a sounding board and that's all it is. And it's frustrating most times. But yeah, it's those kind of common stories when I was surrounded by very brilliant people who were facing quite a lot of challenges, like raising funds or you see great ideas that you think could become something great in future, but then where are they? They're not growing anywhere because there's no funding. On the other side, you're still hearing people saying, oh, we're looking for great opportunities to put funds in. And then there's just that just wide gap and you're like, okay, someone has to step in. Along the line, I was now tinkering on a data project, which is something very interesting, I tell people, because it came up as a result of my own curiosity. I was like, okay, could we build? There's no data, right? I want to understand what's going on in FMCG space. I have zero data of who are the market leaders or what they sell. And along the line, I was writing a newsletter from my own primary research into companies that I called Shadow Titans. And it kind of had quite a lot of people. People wanted to put me on CNN, but I'm a bit shy then. I said, no, I was not going to do that. I backed out. In hindsight, I should not have. But anyway, I went out.
Why do you think you shouldn't have, though? You shouldn't have backed out?
I don't know. I think if I had not backed out, who knows what that part of would have taken shape. Maybe it could have been a business, it could have been an intelligence company. Because right now, I've kind of seen a couple of research intelligence companies that are now coming up, data companies that are being funded. And like, okay, I think I was in the right, I had the right idea, but obviously I was solo, so I couldn't execute it the way I've seen people execute it. So, but okay. What I've seen is that what made me stretch is just the fact that from advertisements to all, we can't really, really tell what our consumers literally want. And so that kind of thinking got me interested to understand what do the radio stations base their pricing by? What do the TV stations base their pricing model by? And then we find out that, okay, it's mostly by Nielsen, one of the largest data research companies in the world. But then Nielsen's own data sets are not real time. They're not rich. They're basically still a bit of guesswork. And this is what everybody's laying their data, their information or pricing upon, a good enough, but not the real time actual analytics that should be used. So it kind of just shown, like, opened my mind that, okay, there is an opportunity there. So along the line, I started speaking about this opportunity and the fact also about business, why businesses are dying, because they're not getting their go-to-market right because of lack of data, right? I was speaking around this. Along the same line, I started seeing someone on Twitter resonating with me about talking around, especially on fundraising. And that was, funny enough, going to be my co-founder, Jude. And wow, we were chatting and talking extensively, and then COVID happened. Now, while COVID happened, quite a lot of businesses were shutting down. It's not easy hearing your friends telling you they are shutting down their companies. While I was pivoting, trying to keep the business afloat and alive, it is an interesting thing because that same year we were profitable. I don't even know how, but anyway, it just happened that we were profitable at the end of the year. But it was not something that was easy to watch. And it also reinforced the reason why there needed to be something to actually save a lot of these companies. So as we were speaking on the DMs, this was the first time Mozilla did an accelerator. I think that was the very first and only accelerator for Africa. Okay. And we joined that accelerator, got into it. I got into it with the idea I had for the data company. And along the line, I'm chatting and then someone buzzed me and like, hey, you're here too. I'm like, oh, dude, big brother, you're here. And we start chatting, right? Because I knew him as big brother. We didn't even know our names. We just were using our monikers. As at that time, for a very long time, before we started chatting, getting to know, we had a lot of interesting things in common, football, support Man U. We watch animes together, play games, you know, common interesting things that made sense. And so, like, it started being discipled. So along the line, we started asking. Now, we were asking as regards, oh, what project do we float for Mozilla Accelerator? But it was now like, oh, look, I built my V1 of this thing. Would you want to check it out? And I said, fine. I said, okay, give me your address. And he sent me an address, and I found out he's my neighbor. And I'm like, what? All this while, literally, we're neighbors. It was the most craziest thing ever. And so we literally always spent the week, Fridays to Sundays, tinkering around this V1. He sent me the very first deck. I laughed. I redid the entire deck. I mean, but it was the very early versions of what Get Equity will turn out to be. And we basically started then figuring out would people be interested to back good companies, or good founders, and even with all the risk that a startup investment, would they be interested? And the answer was yes. I believe when we sent that landing waitlist link, it was a resounding yes. We had over 1,000 people sign up in one day, and so that was. We started calling everybody. We also tried speaking to founders and found like about five companies who were willing to get started.
Do you want to throw a little light on the problem Printivo was trying to solve and also the problem GetEquity is trying to solve?
All right, thank you. Just in case, I think your camera is down. But yeah, so let's put it at a very interesting context of why I fell in love with Printivo. The first thing that happened was, like I said, along my consultancy, I was into music. So then went into the creative sector and I found out it was a huge problem trying to print anything. I was in Port Harcourt then. And so I wished to try and do like small mini concerts or stuff. So we needed to bring banners, shirts, all that thing. And trust me, it was hell. I think the day I realized this was when I tried to print a banner and I was on the road and it was raining and I had banners on my head and I was moving and I was cursing.
Wow.
I was cursing myself because I was going through this stress because of one like printer who frustrated my life. And it made me I had to get those things out by midnight. If not, we couldn't do the show. So, and it's just my own issue along that line that I was still taking back when I started searching for who print my cards. And over the conversation speaking to Yomi, we found out the same common problem existed. Small, medium businesses who are trying to set up and are looking for a printing partner that they can work with did not exist, right? It's either it was large volumes, which they didn't have the money for, or the qualities were not up to par. Then the second problem for the creatives themselves who are trying to bring out their creative ideas couldn't find someone who could actually translate those ideas. Because the entire process was so cumbersome. You wanted to print, you go to Shomolo, you find a printer, you get a queue, you stay in line under the hot sun, you get to your turn. That's when the designer decides he wants to go and eat and then leaves your project. Uh-huh. They then come back with one excuse, oh, there's no fuel. Some anointings, you're already frustrated, flustered. It gets your turn, you're working with a guy, trying to translate or give him the brief, he doesn't translate it well. If you're creative enough, you will get Photoshop, open Photoshop and try and do something. By the time they print this thing, it is like you want to almost cry, right? Because what I put there, even at the same YK mode and what I'm seeing as the final output, is nothing to write home about. So this pain point frustrations were interestingly there before we began Printivo. I checked this on Twitter, and I type print socks, and this went back as early as 2009, and we started 2013. So imagine a good 3-4 years before we began, there were so many comments, so many frustrations, so many pain points. So it was just something that was already on the bubble. It was just there. People had so many of these issues. And I think I saw a case where someone was trying to actually took police to arrest a printer, right? Because the printer did not deliver on his project. So those kind of frustrating things allowed us to decide we wanted first fix our own problem. We were facing the same problem. Right, we wanted to fix our problem, which is actually become printers such that we can print what we wanted to print for our clients better. It was that, right? But mainly we launched this, and the person who bought it was a journalist. She was Russian. She's still on Twitter, by the way. She was running late for an event, and so she needed somewhere to print. And so she made her tweet, it's an emergency, I need a card, I have an event, who could help out? And we said we could. And she said, okay. Who is that?
On Twitter.
Yeah, she was on Twitter. So we reached out to her, so we could do it. And we like basically told her, give us the design. And she sent the design. We hadn't asked for payment, right? But we basically did the design. We printed, because it's our first order. We're so excited, right? You know? And we sent it to her. Then she could transfer. So she was like, wait. Because she ordered, she placed or made this request by 9, by 12 o'clock. It was on our way to her. She still was thinking we were joking. She felt, okay, maybe we were not serious, until she got the call that says, oh, your card is downstairs. And then she literally went on Twitter and posted that, I just got my card. Amazing service. It works. She was shocked. She never believed it was possible. And from there, it literally was like, what? Everybody just started reaching out to us for different things. It sparked our first next 100 orders going forward. And from there, the brand just is selling itself. And what we've always done was just to put that very interesting oomph of service, right? Because we understood customer support, customer service, and customer experience is literally very ignored or very bad in our parts of the world. We decided to focus our strength on that. We wanted people to really love the brand, and not just love it, talk about it. But also the fact that we understand it's customization, right? Well, we understand it's production. Anything can happen. It's not a fault of the client or us, or it might be our machine. So we then created a policy saying if we mess up in terms of bad output, we will reprint for free. And since we've done that, it literally has created a lot of trust quickly with our clients, and most of them have all returned over the years. For this last 10 years, have always been printing with us at least twice every year.
Now that you're mentioning all of this, mm-hmm. right, I can't help but think about some of the challenges that are environmental, right, as a result of the fact that you're doing the business in Africa, in Nigeria specifically, right? I'm talking about issues of power outages, you know, those kind of issues. You also have mm-hmm. issues with community people, you know, all those challenges will always come up, right? So do you want to share some challenges you've had in that regard, yeah. right? I don't know if your environment has played a role in some of the challenges you have faced, and how were you able to solve?
When we started building the business, it was actually something that, first and foremost, like you said, we didn't know anything about printing. Save Yomi and Nodeoga Ibukun, others didn't know anything about printing. It was our first time coming from the creative sector / consultancy sector. What we quickly started trying to figure out was, what were we going to become? And in a nutshell, we kind of built three entities in one, a logistic / order management company, a technology company, and also a production company. And so each kind of co-founder manned their strengths. Yomi for the tech team, working a bit of the design, product manager, because Yomi also is a great designer. So he did a lot of the design outputs and all. I focused on my strength then on the order management systems, how things could get to people, our product marketing, how we hit our strategy, and also fulfillment of our customers' orders. And then we had Deji Bukun, who focused on the production side. Now, the challenges are at where we were. It's not like now that first mapping, right? There wasn't a map, right, at this point. So we didn't know location. So I imagine me coming back from the UK to Nigeria, it was twice harder for me because I didn't know anywhere in Lagos. And you have people say, oh, Oworo. I'm like, where the hell is Oworo? As at that time, but it was my mission basically to learn. And so we literally got a van and went around Lagos. That's how we're doing, and mapping places and getting addresses and getting familiar to these places, speaking to bike riders, speaking to quite a lot of different people, and just kind of mapping locations. And so even quickly, we started building our CRM. We didn't know what was a CRM then. We just knew we had to have a system that collected information of our customers. All these things we were doing was pre what is popular right now. But then, trust me, this didn't exist. There was no map. So we had to go out and build out our own systems from scratch. The internet wasn't so great also. So imagine it's modem. It's not like now we enjoy Wi-Fi. It was modem that were being used. And so there's the same thing, of course, of the infrastructure. The roads were terrible as hell. It was also, how do I put it? It was also a lot of learning around processes. We want things done the same way, and we know those things couldn't work. So we created standard operating procedures of how orders are processed, how they move from statuses to statuses, figuring out an order technology system from scratch, building that entire thing. It was so many problems. And if you looked at our model from outside, if you spoke to anyone, I mean, people will say this business will not last. But, well, here we are. We've outshone, outgrown, and remain dominant over the years. Many people who try to copy our model, as it's very prevalent in Africa, died. And so for us, it was basically building three distinct companies that all partner together to build what Printivo is. But of course, we've grown beyond production now to become a full-on technology company or print innovation company as we are. So the most important thing for ourselves is that we've kind of concepted the way things should be working, and we're just kind of waiting for people's relevance. So I will tell you so much. The product we're launching now, we're figured out 2, 3 years, 4 years prior. Some of them, we were just waiting for the right timing. Some of them as experiments. And over time, every pain point we've had, we've always built it into our system. Everything we use has been custom built from scratch from day one. We used to use off the shelf, but then those weren't working. So our tech team were basically building technologies that have made us 10 times more efficient than the standard traditional business. Our technologies are the ones that enable us move 10 times faster than things with workflow management, things like ganging solutions, how we figure out design leads together, how we ensure that artworks, in terms of if you're doing a brochure, we have softwares that lay the brochures accordingly from page to page. Like, some most internal product we have are extremely cool, built by layers of very amazing people here. Some of them who joined from then, the Congas and Jumias, some of them who are people that self-learned. So it's been brilliant watching where the company has done. The only thing we focus on very obsessively has been our customers, and that's whatever they tell us to go, we go. Yeah.
Awesome. Did you raise, or rather, I know you raised a lot of, you know, investments from angel investors and even institutional investors, right? How difficult was it for you to fundraise?
We didn't raise a lot of funds for our type of business. I would say what we raised so far is pretty very much insignificant to what is required. And I'll give you an example. For, let's say, XY, we raised circa $500,000-$600,000. Let's say, for example, I'm not saying that's what we did. But let's say that's the amount we raised. A typical company in Brazil, in other emerging markets, raises somewhere between $30-$50 million, right? So just imagine that, the $30-$50 million as against a $500K.
Wow.
It's like really heavy gorilla.
Trust-based listed that you raised $160K. Crunchbase listed that you raised about $160K.
Yeah. So it's pretty much there around that amount. So Spriti is very small amount to
Okay, so
compared to
let's dive
what
into
you
Get
have.
Equity. Right. I'm very interested to know, what inspired everything you are doing today at Get Equity, and what does the future look like? What problems long term are you trying to solve?
All right, thank you. For like I said, during COVID, watching a lot of great companies fold because they didn't have enough runway capital, basically they didn't have capital. So we felt there has to be a way to correct this, and that gave rise to what Get Equity will eventually be, right? From tweaking the model daily, speaking to a lot of venture capital firms, PEs, syndicate, angel networks, funds of funds, family office administrators, and different quite various people. The common theme was clear to us that for the major part of things, Africa's funding are in silos, right? Small tiny pocket of silos, and it is affecting quite a lot of issue because information asymmetry, or the way information is flown, or the hierarchy of information is also very haphazard. The second point again is that because of that very nature and because of lack of data, right, it's also a problem in sense of how our like how the demand and supply of capital happens in this in emerging markets, but most especially within Africa. And even far more in Nigeria, its largest economy. Along the line, we started thinking around this supply and demand of capital. If there was a better, cheaper, and efficient more way for one, businesses to raise, right? Businesses to raise, and for the funding partners to find great businesses to fund. That was our first initial thinking. And it worked, right? Created a two-way communication marketplace, which has started spinning quite a lot of different fruits. But along the line, we've also seen that there is quite a vast gap in the infrastructure part of things, right? How do businesses, other businesses who are into this funding space, organize their data, share that data, create liquidity from that data? Because that's one of the core problems, liquidity. And also because some of this liquidity are stuck in kind of projects that are 20, 30 years down the line horizon. Meanwhile, the funding behavior are not looking to do a 30-year down the line front. So if there's ways for quicker, faster, instant liquidity, then that is what we are hoping to create. And it only would occur when the demand, which are funders, which are companies or institutions or syndicates or VCs looking to raise, and the other side, funders themselves. From different asset class, from the biggest, which are PEs, down to the little angels, right? Who are putting small checks. Again, we also want to create this movement and culture to allow backing and investing in startups. It doesn't mean you need to have hundreds of thousands of dollars. You can well start with about 10, right? You just need to back the businesses and worry not or fret not. It's also a risky risk, right? They could die, and businesses die for thousands of myriad of reasons that might not be because of the competency of the management team or something. It's just anything can happen. It is by nature the risk, right? If you compare what happens in Silicon Valley, companies in the US die every single day, as against us, that at least takes years, but there's still that drop. And I always think that the bravest people I know are entrepreneurs because it's not just washing it. It's a mental tasking thing. It's grueling. It needs a lot of people who want to back them. And only the biggest companies are what we call digital villages. And so to win, you need to have a village support you. Village here could be your customers, your partners, stakeholders, shareholders, your investors, whatnot. But for us at Get Equity, we have always been building tools that will help. So let's take one of those interesting tools. We understood talent. Right, in the nature of where things are, a lot of talents are leaving the country, great minds are leaving because of the economy, and they are looking to I mean, make something from their name and nature. And so we understood that at a point in time, if a major talent leave, who is left? What will happen to the companies who are building here, who are staking here? So one of the ways to respond to that was how we built employee stock options. So what that allows is startups to be able to provide an option for employees to own a bit or shares in the company that they work for. As a way, for, of course, as a strategy for the founders to keep great talent, but also to give back, right, which is the common theme, to give back to the employees who put their hard time, their strength, their time and consideration and also belief in the founding team or the management team and do all they need to scale those companies to be able to own something substantial if that company has an exit or an exit event or that may come. And so these employee stock options are items that we thought about considerably to give them back. So in terms of course of other product we've done, we're building things like equity-backed credits where you could take a loan backed by what asset classes you've kept up on Get Equity. We're building products like shareholder management and allows founders to understand their cap table. A cap table is the capitalization table, the record of ownership in a company. And so digitalizing that instead of maybe keeping it in the doc or Excel sheet, but allowing you to understand who came what, at what place, is it a safe, is it a share purchase agreement, what amount they came in at, what is the valuation of the business as at that time, what is the potentially method of calculating that valuation, was it DCF, WACC, discounted model, commercial market models, or Burkle's model, any of those things. Understand the journey to scale, understand how part to profitability, all those kind of things would happen under the shareholder management system that we are building. Then, of course, our focus has always been how do we scale this, not just within Nigeria, but across Africa, allowing things from secondaries, which we can do. Our secondaries run from a peer-to-peer buy an order book for buy and sell. And then also then creating the infra for LP management by these syndicates or VCs or institutional portals to be able to run a lot of investment clubs, but also invest in startups we also source with our venture team and network partners. But at the end of the day, we're creating that ecosystem to support the capital and private growth market and then businesses across Africa. And that is essentially why we began Get Equity and awesome. What we are hoping awesome. To achieve as the years go.
All right. Thanks a lot, Temitope. Right. So the next question I actually have for you is what part of your childhood, I don't know if it was your upbringing or your parents, your family, your school, but what part of your childhood do you think prepared you for everything you're doing today?
I think maybe me reading quite a lot, being that curious person, always tinkering with stuff, was what shaped my goal. Like I earlier said, entrepreneurship was not something that I found doing. It just became something as a result of time on my hand while in university. But then early up, I was reading quite a lot of things. So I usually leapfrogged. That's the right word. I always leapfrogged things from classes to understanding of topics. I was always like way ahead, and I kind of just was waiting for people kind of to just slow me down, that kind of thing. But also is the fact that I just love thinking deeper from things. When I see things, any item or could be a book, it could be movies, I would like to analyze it, tear down, go research about it. That's no reason, no brainers. National Geographic, Discovery, Criminal ID, many of Business Insider, most of all these things became my most favorite channels to binge. I loved reading, tweaking, writing. I had thousands of diaries I used to just keep in the place to write everything I had in my head. And that practice is still very common for me. So Well, how did they prepare me? Because of the fact that I consume quite a lot of knowledge that some people might find useless, they kind of became very important to me when I started my businesses, because I could pull thoughts about, oh, okay, I read here, let me try this, let me try that. And it helped me figure out a lot of things, and it's helped me because I don't see myself as complete. While people might say, oh, wow, you've done so many things, I don't think I have done enough for me. I don't think I'm fulfilled enough. I don't think I like to rest on laurels. I don't at all. I always see these versions of myself as the worst versions that I need to always improve on. So that constant curiosity to improve, to tinker, to always experiment, has led me to my quote unquote successes, because I don't believe I'm successful yet. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay, awesome. Do you have any regrets? Or okay, let me rephrase, right? If you had the chance to do anything over again, right, would you do anything differently?
Great question. I think one or two tweaks into Printivo along the line, we should have gone asset light maybe from start, but it was also the fact that we were not printers. We just found ourselves into the printing industry. But yeah, I would tweak the fact that we started going asset heavy, which we how we got started, by owning all the machines, all the systems, and all.
You mean you bought machines, or you bought?
Oh yeah, we bought machines. Yeah, we invested heavily in equipment and all. In hindsight, we shouldn't have gone that. That's just us, but the same way you also left for us having strong quality control. So it still nets off when you look at it. But for me personally, just for personal reasons, I think we would have been better doing asset light than where we are, because we're back to us being asset light than, and it's been what has kept us for a very long time. For Get Equity, of course, we would have done much, much better in the whole communication side, because quite a lot of people mistake us as crowdfunding. We are not the crowdfunding platform. I always say this to anybody that knows. It's like crowdfunding brings connotations from the SEC, and we've had meetings with them, and we've clearly shown them what we are. And everyone can agree we're very different. But I think the perception has just stuck, and it's kind of a hard work trying to re-explain it, but we're not differentiating. I think once people see out all the new products we're launching, they will clearly see that we're not what they initially thought we were. So yeah, those that were things that I think would be changed. From a regret standpoint, I'd say not launching that my data company. Because now I think not just the data company, I think right now my plan is that every idea I have, launch it. If it fails, it fails. I think I have too many ideas. I'll do business models. I'll just drop it there. But now I think my year is about trying out these things, experimenting with them, even with my own heart and money. Let me fail, right? I want to fail it. I know I failed, than not to do them. So that's my biggest regret, is this idea. The idea I should have actually put some weight behind it. Who knows where it would have been today? But now I come across greater ideas, much more polished. So I'm taking them actually step by step.
Awesome. Okay, so my final question for you would be, you know, what advice do you have for emerging founders who are building great companies, right? They have awesome ideas and they're trying to execute and launch these, you know, ideas into billion-dollar startups, right? So what ideas would you have, you know, for such founders?
All right. I'll do what no one did to me, which is to tell you the truth. One, businesses, like I said, business is very hard. Entrepreneurship is brutal in this market. So go to a place that passion is what keeps you going, because that's the only thing that will keep you going, right? When you do a lot of things monotonously, but the fact that you face daily challenges, we laugh and jokingly call shiggy, but we face daily challenges and almost crazy things or madness. If you don't have the passion for this, if you don't have the passion for what you came into to do, you will find it that you'll be disillusioned. You would not enjoy doing what you do. And if you don't enjoy what you do, that's a problem, right? You start resenting, it becomes, you get frustrated, basically. The second part, you don't have all the answers, so find a build with peers, right? Join business networks with peers, on talk to people. As again, be original. You don't need to fake things. You don't need to lie when things are bad. Say it as it is, right? And work with people that would want to help you. So the third, define, truly understand what you are building, which is speaking, not just to speak to customers and say, oh, yeah, my building a solution. There are methods of gathering feedback from customers. You see from their body language. You ask questions to elicit response. In sense, questions like, okay, this is my solution, but do you think it really meets your needs, right? Let the person speak. There are common things you find out that tells you if your solution really, really solves the problem. Again, don't see something that it looks nice to have, right? Find what are common actual problem. Like I told you, Prince Evo was a problem that existed. Like, we came with solution to solve a problem that existed for 5-6 years before we began that problem. It was already an existing market that we came with our tiny solution that found fit immediately and made us profitable. There are many, many problems out there that just need good solutions, right? The markets kind of exist by what you see from the traditional people. In the smartest way I tell people is, look at every traditional business today. They are still alive 10 years from, like, they're still alive after 5, 10 years, 15 years. They are where the money is. They are literally, that's where the, like, markets that don't have money die. But if markets have stayed that long, 30, 40 years, that's where the money is. That's where you should be focusing on fixing. Don't go where, or create new markets. And I get the advice of creating new market. If you want to create new market, find out what the existing submarkets that will become part of your foundation are. What are they facing? Don't build nice to have products. And you are communicating features, not solutions. I always tell people when I prepare people for deck, when you're telling me your features, I've heard enough, right? Tell me the solution. In all I've been speaking around printing and investing in startups, I've never talked about, oh, we have one solid front end or back end thing. I'm not telling that to any of the persons listening here. It's about the problem. What is the problem? And this is where great founders identify exactly what those problems are. Because if you don't identify it, your direction will be good. And it's also okay when you don't identify from the beginning that you need to change. Don't be stuck up on these things. Think about it intellectually. It's not making money. Why are you spending all your amount and effort on something not making money? Move to what makes money. Because at the end of the day, right, your investors want to scale and they want a business that is making money. At the end of the day, you personally need to make money to power and pay salaries and grow and market. And so if you cannot deliver on that, it is a problem. The third is also to identify, not just identifying those things, right? Take out Silicon Valley conventional things and throw them away. It will not work, right? If you learned in a book, oh, let's try one A-B testing, you hear A-B testing and all. A-B testing is fine, right? It's growth. It is trying, putting one or two things across board. You change the user experience, the user flow and all. But what is that? It's experimenting and testing for what users would love. At the end of the day, that's what you're trying to experiment. What is it from these two different cohort of people? What is it exactly they want to see? So you might need to throw out the rule books sometimes and go with the first person interaction, right? It is understanding where your users are, where they hang out, what they love, and just becoming it. It is going and thinking across board, smarter ways. And just to give you a case point, there's a business in India, I think there was Tata. Tata is that does IT and all that. And they wanted to, I think they were building a digital payment system in India and they wanted to market to people. What did they do? They literally did bought a radio because they realized the people that will be using their product, listening to more, like they're listening to news, information and all on the radio than any other channel. And they literally branded their radio and had programs that were communicating their app, radio
wow.
to app. And you know what? That app exploded literally with 500 million users. These are things that I don't think anybody would be telling you would work. So sometimes it is also important to try out first principle thinkings, experiment with different things, try out things that nobody is doing, right? But also from the standpoint of you need to find solutions that are worth it. Like in the fintech industry, right? We've talked about this extensively. You're setting up your payment gateway, all nice and great. But I think you should be realizing by now that maybe the payment gateway space, subspace, is already the one, right? Like it's going to take you 10 times harder to topple the current kings, right? The Paystacks, the Flutters, the Money Points. I mean, not saying you should not go after those markets. I'm just telling you that it might take longer. Why? There are many other parts in the fintech place in terms of Rails, Ombudsman, remittances, instant transfers, even agency coalition. Think there's so many services that are lacking, right? That you could also build around and become dominant kings in. So you don't need to do what is popular. You sometimes just need to differentiate in the market from day one. By nature of marketing, when you differentiate from day one, right, and market differently from day one, that's how you stand out from a very busy crowd. So there's a lot of thinking and principles that I think that needs to be said. Founders themselves need to understand that it's a long race. It's a marathon, if you will. And so you just need to be also very conscious of what you are expecting, right? Secondly, by nature, it's also looking at the skill set. Sometimes by nature, we don't have skill sets, so you can create them. Or at the same time, it's also the fact that no one here is going to pet you maybe because you built something. It's not going, you're going to face quite a lot of apprehension from day one. You're going to find and fight and be frustrated and cry and feel hopeless and feel hopeful and feel top of the world and be so optimistic. At the same time, some days you feel like you're disillusioned. You find yourself falling. You will need to pick yourself up. You will need to be the best at the best. You need to be the strongest person there when you are going through so much challenges, but you just need to show up every single day because you are building for future. And this is the most important thing. You need to be prepared before you get into startup life or entrepreneurship in Africa emerging markets. But you know the sweetest thing they say is that when you're at the top, the reward is more hard work. So just know that you're in for a lifetime of working and you are precautions that you want to work till you die, right? So if that is you, then welcome aboard and you'll find the community always supportive and hopefully you scale. Definitely for me, I also believe we need exits in the millions, tens, millions, hundreds of millions before we look for the billions, right? By nature, these unicorns, it's not easy anywhere. And that's even in the US, right? How many unicorns exist in the US? There are not as many. but there are mighty many million, tens of millions and million exits in the US. So we need to fill those many so that there's more liquidity. And then who knows, when you've built, imagine if you've exited 4 or 5 times in a 10 million, 100 million change, the next idea out of those 10s will become a billion, because it is learning on those experiences that allows you to build faster, 10 times better. So that will be me for the entire ecosystem. I really hope people are out to change. And for me, like I said, if you need more help, I'm always open. It's a paid service these days. I stopped doing free, sorry. But yeah, I do consult, go to market strategy, business consultancy, management consultancy, and growth for businesses at fee. But at the same time, you can also connect to us at Get Equity if you're fundraising, you're profitable, or you have revenue and you're looking to raise. We're always open to hear from you. Of course, if you're a business or a startup looking to print at a discount, I'm here to serve you. So yeah, that's just me shamelessly plugging myself. But yeah, thank you so much, Gerald.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Timmy Tokme, aka Sinzu. Thanks a lot for jumping on Backend Podcast with me. I really, really appreciate it. Well, so enjoy the rest.
Thank you, and have a lovely day, and stay great.